another edition of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a special post-election day special for you. I am with my co-host, Sherry Coolidge, but I did the intro today because I've relegated Sherry to special guest, along with Enquirer political editor Carl Weiser and our wonderful State House reporter at the Enquirer's Columbus Bureau, Jesse Ballmer. We're going to talk about all things election, but first, I just need to know how much sleep you all got last night.
According to my Fitbit, I got 4 hours and 27 minutes.
And that's not good, because Carl's cranky when he doesn't get his rest. Sherry, happy birthday, by the way, as we record this, and we are going to drop this quickly, since it is an Election Day special. Happy birthday, Sherry.
Thank you. I can't imagine a better way to celebrate it than covering an election.
And then Jesse Ballmer, calling via cell phone from Columbus. How are you today, Jesse?
You know, I'm caffeinated and ready to go.
All right. So I'm going to ask a question.
This is Carl's first appearance. Is this correct?
No.
Yes.
This is your first appearance on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. Welcome,
yes,
Carl.
Thank you. It's a big day for me.
Man, why did I not? Well, welcome. We should have like a special sound effect, like music for someone's debut. Let's jump right to it. We're going to jump into special guest time because you all are here. My first question for the group is simply, if you look at Ohio and how it's been described over the years, especially Trump winning in 2016, Trump winning in 2020, a Republican governor, many people describe Ohio as a predictably red state. Did that change yesterday? And we'll start with Jesse.
Yeah, see, I probably come at this from a different view, sitting in Columbus, where Republicans hold almost every statewide elected office and a supermajority in the state legislature. So my indication is no. I think what we learned is that these issues like abortion access and legal marijuana are more popular than the Democratic candidates who are supporting them. So the issues are very popular, and that doesn't always translate to the candidates who back them.
So, for example, Ohio being the only state with an abortion vote, it was, in our case, an amendment to the Constitution. Will we see other states follow suit with Democrats seizing on to those culture war issues?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there are already a number of states that are looking at abortion on the ballot in 2024, including Arizona and Florida and several more. And I think they've learned, I mean, really, there have been 7 victories on this since Roe v. Wade was overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court in last June. And so this is a winning issue for reproductive rights advocates. It's a winning issue for Democrats. And so they're going to keep pushing it in states.
So we're going to assume that anyone listening to the podcast already knows the results because everybody's plugged in. We're going to do analysis here. But just to recap, issue one, codifying abortion protections in the Ohio Constitution passes. Issue two, legalizing recreational marijuana passes. Let's shift to that really quickly with a local focus for people in Cincinnati in that, Carl, were you surprised to see that, now Hamilton County we knew probably was going to overwhelmingly vote yes. I don't think a lot is going to change because you can walk down the streets of Cincinnati right now and get a contact high. So I don't think a lot is going to change in our experience if you're downtown. But what about Butler County, Warren County, Claremont County? Were you surprised?
I was surprised to see issue two pass in those three counties as well as some other counties in the state. And Scott Wortman, who is our political reporter, said that might be a result of sort of the libertarian leanings of the voters in these Republican counties. These were very Trumpy counties, you know, very red, very Republican. There's essentially no Democratic office holders in any of these counties. And yet, when they're asked, should we legalize marijuana? They were, sure, let's do it. So I was surprised.
So do you think, and this gets back to the question I asked earlier about is Ohio shifting blue? Do you think that these issues are going to have an impact on actual candidates in the next election cycle?
That's a really good question. I think the candidate they might have the biggest issue on is in the U.S. Senate race, where Sherrod Brown, he was on one of the TV shows this morning, looking, if he looks at these maps on abortion and marijuana, he sort of sees a guide to where he's the last essentially statewide Democratic candidate in Ohio. He sees a guide to where he can maybe suss out some extra votes to maybe keep him in office in a state that, has gone Trump 8.5 points the last two election cycles.
Okay. So, Sherry, let me let you weigh in on the fact, or the question I asked earlier about, do you think we're seeing a shift? And from the perspective of, we had something significant last night happen in one of the races you were covering, and that is the city of Cincinnati is now, the city council has no Republicans. Liz Keating was the last Republican standing. She did not win her bid for re-election last night. She came in last in a field of 10 for 9 positions, but still, she came in last. What did that tell you?
Well, I mean, getting to the first question that you asked, I think the Republicans completely did think that it boiled down to Republican versus Democrat, but they mismanaged it from the get-go, starting at the August election, because I don't think it came down to Republican or Democrats for voters. I think it came down to personal rights. The people came out for issue one thinking that they wanted reproductive rights, and people came out for issue two wanting to legalize marijuana. But I do not think in any stretch of the imagination that the state is turning blue or even leaning towards blue. Now, are our cities, we're becoming more segregated. And I did write a story about Liz, and I really get into this issue in that story, which is these blue metros, red states. And that's, the Democrats are really, they're coming together in our cities. And then there's these rural areas, and these rural areas are going to carry these statewide elections going forward. I don't think the Democrats are like, I guess we're winning governor next time, because that's not any sort of easy path. That's not what's happening. This was a personal rights referendum, I think.
I think that's an astute observation. What I'll counter that with is, and I'll throw this to Jesse, I heard some observers last night saying that what this shows us is, definitely we have a minority rule state, and the lock that the Republicans have on the state legislature, for example, is really a result of how the districts are outlined. I'll say the G word, gerrymandering.
You love those maps, right, Jesse?
Do you think there's something to that?
I think it's going to be really interesting how Republicans at the State House respond to this. And we saw a bit of this even starting on Tuesday night, where the speaker was saying, we're going to try to work at ways in the law to fight against issue one that just passed, like maybe an hour or two earlier. And then you have the Senate president saying, maybe we'll put a ballot initiative to try to overturn issue one. Again, the same night that this passed, the voters presumably spoke on abortion access in Ohio. And so if there gets to be this kind of like dichotomy between the state house and voters, where voters start to think that the state house doesn't care what they think, that they aren't responsive to them, there could be a backlash against that. And it's very likely that we're going to have a redistricting reform measure on the ballot in 2024, which would perhaps take this map making away from politicians and put it in the hands of a citizens commission instead. The more that people feel like their lawmakers aren't representing them, the more likely something like that is to pass.
So you touched on something that we reported last night. I think your colleague Haley, if I'm not mistaken, that the Republicans, Matt Huffman, the Senate president in particular, have already said that this isn't over, especially in terms of abortion rights and issue one, that they were already thinking of ways that they could bring this back to the ballot, that they could do things in the legislature to put in place some restrictions. They didn't waste any time getting that message out. From your perspective, what could they actually do now that we have a constitutional amendment?
Yeah, so on the abortion measure, they have way less leeway than they do on marijuana, because issue one was a constitutional amendment. And so they could try to pass a different constitutional amendment to either just curb it a bit or repeal it entirely. I think that would be really hard. But on issue two, legalizing marijuana, this is an initiated statute, so this is state law. And so they have a fair amount of leeway to, like, change the tax structure, to change the level of THC, for example. The question, though, will become, voters just said pretty resoundingly that they want legal marijuana in Ohio. And so how much can you mess with that before you upset people to the point where they would, come back at the ballot box?
Do you think they even care about upsetting people, or is this more they are going to fight this hard because of the, I guess I would say the shifting to the right of the base, the alignment with Trump supporters, that this is going to be the line in the sand in Ohio?
Yeah, I think to a certain degree, a number of these candidates, including the top legislative leaders, live in districts that rejected issues one and two. And so they feel like they're representing their constituents. And that goes back to Sherry's kind of urban-rural, urban-suburban divide in Ohio, where the people who probably are most likely to support issues one and two live in the cities and in the suburbs, which are predominantly represented by Democrats. And they're in the super minority in the state legislature because the way the maps are drawn and the way elections have gone.
All right, so we're going to switch tracks, literally. See what I did there? In Cincinnati, we also had a very hot, contentious local issue, 22. The ballot question asking Cincinnati residents, city of Cincinnati residents, whether or not the city should sell the Cincinnati Southern Railway. And just a quick summary of what that means. Cincinnati has owned a railway since the late 1800s, currently leases it to Norfolk Southern for $25 million a year. The plan was to sell the railway. Norfolk Southern agreed ahead of time to a sales price of $1.6 billion with a B dollars, not million, but billion dollars. And that money would be put in a trust fund that, thanks to the state legislature, there are guardrails in place that dictate the interest earned off that trust fund must be used, as the lease payment is now, for infrastructure, maintenance, and repairs. Whew! Am I so geeky that I can say that off the top of my head? I can't even. But anyway, Carl, you were surprised it passed. Why?
I was surprised, and I'm sure the audience is wondering, why is this political editor getting surprised by every election result? And part of it is because I think the loudest and most vocal voices that we heard, both in real life and in social media, were the ones against it. And we, aside from this a very expensive ad campaign on TV, $4.5 million, which, as Sherry Coolidge reported, was the most expensive campaign effort in Cincinnati history. There weren't a lot of rallies, or it didn't seem the public was rallying in support of it very loudly. When the Enquirer held their forum at the Cincinnati Museum, at the Union Terminal there on the forum, on the issue 22, the audience was overwhelmingly and pretty raucously against it. There was a quiet majority who simply looked at the numbers and said, this makes sense. We can have a fund that can pay for our infrastructure in perpetuity. A lot of people in Cincinnati probably didn't even know we owned a railroad to begin with.
I didn't.
Yeah,
I had no idea.
So there wasn't an emotional attachment to this. It's not like we were selling Union Terminal or the Carew Tower or something. This was something we didn't even know we had. And $1.6 billion is, even in 2023, is still a lot of money.
So, Sherry, there is no one I know that has been steeped in this issue more than you. You have reported on it. You have dug really deep into the concerns of the opposition. we have even reported extensively on how the board that manages the railway conducted its meetings. I mean, just so much we could get into. But first of all, I have to say that you look like the weight of the world is off your shoulders now that this election is over. I mean, you're smiling. You got, you know, the sparkles back in your eye. I mean, this was a grind to cover. So I don't know where you want to go with that non-question question I just asked you, but I'm sure you have lots of thoughts. So just, like, let it all out, Sherry.
You know what? I said this on Twitter a couple weeks ago that, you know, I don't have a stake if it passes or fails. I was surprised that it passed. I will own that, but narrowly. So there's still a lot to be said here. It wasn't some overwhelming, we all want to sell this. The mayor has a lot of work to do. We'll talk about that in a second. But I said that if I could go to bed, apparently on the 8th and not the 7th, having provided every bit of detail about this sale that voters could make a good decision for themselves, if I felt good about what I did, then I would be happy. And I do feel that way. It was a lot, and I have been absent from my family. I've been absent from my friends. This morning, over one, people were like, happy birthday, we care. We're so excited to have you back. Because I really have only talked and cared about this. But I did go to bed thinking I provided all of the information and this is what the voter said. And so I'm lighter and happier for having done that.
Well, one thing I should share with our listeners is that I gauge the balance of our reporting based on the criticism I get when we cover an issue. And since I was since I was getting it like hammered from both sides, I mean, it started with the fact that about a month and a half ago, right around when early voting started, the Cincinnati Enquirer editorial board endorsed the sale. I mean, came right out and said, this makes sense for a couple of reasons. One is that part of the pro issue 22 campaign was all about the fact that the city has deferred maintenance. The city needs to do something to recover revenue lost by the earnings tax. We're not going to get into all of that. But there's a significant need for the city to keep up with the infrastructure, especially, and this is kind of one of the points in the editorial, when you have a lot of private investment happening in the community, as we see now. I mean, you can look out and see cranes and projects and all of that, that the city needs to keep up with that, and infrastructure is very important. And for me, it boiled down to, I mean, with all the emotions surrounding it, for me, it really was a question of whether what your risk tolerance is as an investor. Do you want to keep your money in real estate where you're going to get a reliable flow of cash from renting or leasing it, even though it's a railway and people can argue which way the railway industry is going? It is real estate. And it is going to probably appreciate over time, where if you take that money and put it in the market, you have to have, you know, be able to weather the highs and the lows and the storms. And so it's not like this ethical decision. It's really more what you're comfortable with. And so the editorial board supported it. And I know that made it difficult for you because, man, did we start hearing from those who were opposed to it. And as we reported on this, the back and forth and what was happening with the points raised by the opposition, then those in favor of issue 22, which is basically the political class here, former mayors, current city council members. I think city council passed it 8-1, mm-hmm. if I'm remembering this right. The business community, the chambers, all were in support of it. And then they started, you know, I started taking some heat from them. Disappointingly, their concerns were about why are you giving, and I'm going to put it all out there now, why are you giving voice to these uninformed, fringy people? Which I thought, okay, well, that speaks a lot about the understanding of what our job is, and that's to give voice to those who don't have voice, voice to those who aren't in power, and let the voters decide for themselves. And I thought you did an outstanding job of that. And I know if I took heat, you were taking some heat as well. And I saw it even on social media.
But you know what? That's okay. And I love to have a good conversation. I like to put some facts out and let people have a conversation on social media. I'm not a big like back and forth person. I don't think any good comes from that myself, but I want to give people a platform to do that. The thing that my biggest takeaway from this is actually the engagement that I saw. The fact that it passed with 52% with a big money campaign on one side and citizens, not fringe people, actual citizens stepping up and caring, I really hope that translates into staying that way and having them come to City Hall and have their voice heard. And so I'm so excited about the level of engagement, and I get energy from that because I love when people care. And City Hall is open to everyone. And I hope, you know what, these projects, there's a long list of projects, and I want people to stay engaged until, you know, nobody said this is the starting project. Now, if I was doing it, I think I know what I would start with. But no one said this is the starting project. And so I hope people stay engaged and are like, these are the projects. Or if something else pops up and it's like, no, we really want to get this done. So I'm very excited hear citizen voices.
Real quickly, you alluded to next steps. So run down like the next three things that are going to happen now that they have the vote they need to sell the railway.
Railroad Board meets on Tuesday the 14th. That's their very next meeting. They will be picking the person to manage the money. There's a list of 16 people who put in bids, and they're very serious money managers from all over the country and here, because the person who does this has to, you know, do a good job. So all those investments, you know, all those predictions come true.
There's
so
not
who
a lot
does
of weight
this
on that person's shoulders, is there?
No, none. And they have to put themselves really out in the public.
Like, so is this meeting going to be at the Queen City Club?
You know, it's not. It's going to be at the Walnut Hills Library. That's an inside joke at point? I don't know.
That's not an inside joke. No, you wrote a story about it. People can look it up.
I know. All right. So
A little heat over pointing out that the Railway Board was meeting at the Queen City Club, which is a private members-only club. Not exactly the place where you want to conduct business on behalf of the public.
No, and if it was such a great place to meet, how come after we asked questions about them meeting there, they changed it?
Right.
Like,
and they're still
so
defending
great,
it. They're still,
it's fine.
They're still defending
it's fine.
It to me.
You know what? They are having these conversations in public now. There's no more executive sessions. So we're going to move forward and be happy with the transparency that they've promised and that we're going to see. That's the next thing. They're going to pick this money manager.
And in their defense, after all of that, they had their press conference November a year ago.
Yes.
So even though people can be critical of how they got to the point of proposing the sale, the community had a year to wrestle with it. You had a year to do the reporting. There was a year for people to organize and list the reasons why they were in opposition. So I think in the end, democracy was served. I do.
No, I agree. And the voters did have their say. Democracy was served. And I just felt like a lot of people knew what it was. Like, I went to some polling places, talked to people outside. Everybody was so nice yesterday. I don't know if it was like the weather or that they cared and they were engaged, but I wasn't like, I was asking the questions like, I'm Sherry Coolidge. I'm here from the Inquirer. I would like to speak about issues 22 and 24. And people were like, either coming out or going in, and they're like, sure, they know exactly what I was talking about. They weren't like these esoteric issues. And so I do think that people had enough time to understand it and were paying attention.
All right. Well, in the few minutes
The board meets. Oh. There are two board members up for reappointment. It'll be interesting to see if the mayor chooses the same two people, or he picks different people that have like a lot of money manager experience. Who knows if those people want to stay on the board? Off the top of my head, I think it's Paul Muthing and Mark Mallory. You know, there's a lot of facts in my head right now. But we'll be hearing about that in the coming days, like what he wants to do with that. This sale is going to go through in the first quarter next year. And so
how many are on the railway board?
Five.
You know, what's crazy?
Democrats, Republicans, it has to be a mix.
To Carl's point, I didn't even know that we owned a railway. Now I can, I think I can name four of the five on the railway board. If you, so you've got former Mayor Lucan, you've got Paul Muthing, you've got former Mayor Charlie Lucan, you've got Amy Murray. Who am I missing?
Paul Sylvester. He's Paul a CPA and he runs all the finances.
He's the quiet one.
He wants to be the quiet one.
He's one that hasn't like yelled at me. So and the reason I can name them all is because four of the five have. Have pulled me aside to express their concern with our coverage, which tells me we're asking tough questions. So good job, Sherry.
Same to me. So then so the sale goes through first quarter of next year. But the good news is there are lease payments coming. So with this $1.6 billion sale, it does come with two transaction fees. The first one was $5 million for kind of overhead and stuff. The city got that a while ago, and they've been spending it on all the things they need to get this on the ballot and everything, except not the campaign. Then there's a $20 million transaction fee, but there's also going to be some lease payments going forward. So December, January, February, probably, we're going to see about $20 million in lease payments for those. This is very important. And another $7 million, I forget what that, like, of other kind of fees. Because that's the money that's going to go for infrastructure in this very first year in the budget that's coming that has to be passed by June 30th. So the fund will be set up, but nobody's spending the fund. They got to get it all ready to go. We won't really see anything from this fund until the year after, but we're going to have lease payments, much like we have in the past, to help bolster the capital budget of all these infrastructure projects for next year. So those are the next steps.
Those are a lot of next steps. All right, so we're going to wake up Jesse now. I'm sure, you know, sitting in Columbus, she fell asleep listening to the, you know, ins and outs of what's going on with the railway. Are you still with us, Jesse?
Can't express how thrilled I am about the names of the rail board.
All right, so we're going to go to wrap this up. I'm going to give you each a moment to share your final thoughts on the 2023 November election, and we will. Since you were so patient, Jesse, start with Jesse.
Yeah, I guess my final thoughts are abortion access and legal marijuana are popular with Ohioans. And we knew this from polls, and now we know this from the votes. And so will Republican lawmakers do some soul searching when they pass legislation that is that they know is out of step with the will of voters? And what will be the repercussions if they do that?
All right. Carl.
Can I offer a non-political That's So Cincinnati moment?
Carl, absolutely. You know what? Let's hear it.
Yes, going rogue.
For those who don't know, I am from Buffalo, New York originally, and so I'm a huge Bills fan. And so I was at the Sunday night Bills-Bengals game, and we were treated so lovingly by the Bengals fans. People were high-fiving us. One even asked us, you know, there's this guy in a Bengal shirt, and he asked us, you know, hey, did you have a good experience? And I just thought it was so generous of the Cincinnati.
So you were playing the role of out-of-towner.
Yes, I think they thought that I brought
well,
a friend from Buffalo.
Well, I saw you that night, Carl, and you look like, I can't even explain how Buffalo Billsy you looked that night. I didn't know they made Buffalo Bills Hawaiian style shirts.
Yes, they do.
So. And I don't think I needed to know that, but man, you look the part of the visiting fan from Buffalo. Well, that's good to hear.
Everyone's very welcoming, and they treated us as a guest, and also they were drunk, which is awesome.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm still going to ask you for a final thought on the election, Carl. You're not going to get off that easily.
I think, you know, we didn't talk at all about the Kentucky part of the election, but I think that was, you know, as our reporter Julian Almendarez has written, you know, the Kentucky governor's race might have been actually one of the more important races because the Kentucky race has actually foretold the presidential election race the following year because the Kentucky's on this weird schedule where they vote the year before. So I don't know exactly what it might foretell, but we did have an incumbent Democrat survive and thrive in the state that has foretold the presidential election, I think, the last five times.
That is very insightful, Carl. I'm going to write that down. It's okay. I mean, there are all kinds of indicators to watch, but that's a significant one. I agree with you.
So goes Kentucky, so goes the nation.
I know. We need to do T-shirts, hashtag Kentucky Matters. No? Okay. Sherry. We saved you for last. Happy birthday.
If you asked me a year ago what I would most care about today, it would be the council race, but turns out it was the railroad. We did have a council race. First time, you know, we've already talked about the idea that Liz Keating, the lone Republican, lost, but this is the first time it's been all Democrats elected. They'll all be sworn in again in January, so Liz will have like a lame duck session. I think my biggest takeaway from looking at the votes for this, Jean-Michel Lemon-Kearney came in first. No surprise there. I knew that was happening. She came in first last time 2 years ago. But Mika Owens, she came in second. Now, these are close. Reggie Harris came in third. But Mika, I think coming in as the number two vote getter shows she's shining. And I think there's something there. And I'll just get out my other crystal ball. The mayor's race is starting probably in January. Of course, we've already heard that the mayor is running for reelection. He does have to, you know, raise some money. He's kind of he's not starting from a position of power money. He'll be able to raise money, but that's fine. But anybody who wants to run in 2025 is going to have to start raising money. So you have to declare. So that's like, that's the great thing about like these campaign finance reports to start. You got to declare. And I am not predicting a one-person mayor's race. I think we're going to go back to 2005, Carl, where it's kind of like a more open field. No matter, I'm not saying that Aftab is not popular. He certainly, certainly is. But I think that people have some political ambitions in this city. And I'm not just saying Mika. I think that we're just going to see a wider race than possibly we thought, and not a two-person race. So that is going to get started in January. So that's kind of a takeaway of looking at this list of council members.
That's interesting. So as you start compiling your Cincinnati politicians to watch list, ooh, you've got Mika up there.
I do.
So are you talking mayor's race? Are you talking...
I haven't heard that, but if you look at these numbers, you kind of think that. I've talked to many, you know, Jan Michelle hasn't said, I want to be mayor, but I've heard many people say Jan Michelle should run for mayor and could win. That's something
she,
I've heard.
Would she challenge? I mean, Aftab made her vice mayor for a reason. Would you think she would challenge Aftab?
You know, the mayor's having a gaggle today, and I'm actually going to ask him if he's going to reconfigure any of the committees and anything. So we're going to like start with asking some questions and, you know, 2029 is a long way away. So if you're going to run, you have to run in 2020. It's a four-year term. It's not 2 years like council. So 2029 is a long time away. And you might say to yourself, if I have these different ambitions and everything, it's 25. I don't really want to wait until 29. And if you really want to get into it, if P.G. Sittenfeld prevails on his appeals... Or is, I will say
why
it.
Why are you taking us down the rabbit hole when I'm trying to wrap up, Sherry?
You asked me for...
Producer Kareem, sitting in for Phil, is waving like his hair's on fire.
Pardoned,
wrap it up, Sherry.
Or is pardoned. He would be in the mix too, maybe. So there you go.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, you left us on a cliffhanger. Much more to talk about there. Thanks, everyone. My only takeaway I wanted to share is that... Ohio's election, especially issue one, was a nationwide topic of interest. Our audience last night spanned the country as people were wanting to see how Ohio handled that ballot question. And so Kentucky, hashtag Kentucky matters, hashtag Ohio always matters. So that was my takeaway, that there were a lot of eyes on Ohio last night. For those who weren't watching national coverage. All right, Kareem, thanks for waving your hands. We're going to wrap this up and go into our last segment.
Free
thanks,
Carl
everybody.
And Jesse. You know how we know it was Carl's first appearance?
Why?
He went out of order with his That's So Cincinnati moment.
That's
I know he
okay.
listens every week because we talk about it usually.
And that was a great one.
All right.
And I was glad to hear it because I have a friend who I worked with at USA Today who's a Pittsburgh fan. And gosh, it had to be 3, maybe 4 years ago. He came into Cincinnati with some of his friends wearing their you know, Roethlisberger jerseys and all of that, and said that they were treated terribly by the Cincinnati fans. I think that's just a Pittsburgh thing.
I think it's a Pittsburgh thing. Honestly, when I go to games and like I see and I hear someone sitting next to me that's come from out of town, I'm such a geek. I always want to know what they think of Cincinnati. Why did they come to a game here? What did they think? What did they do? Like, I, like, you know, run my own poll of the people sitting around me. So I'm always nice to them.
Well, I was down at the banks for a little bit before the game, and I saw a lot of Buffalo and Cincinnati fans, you know, drinking together, patting each other on the back. It was just a nice feeling, nice vibe
after
that
last
night.
Year, too.
Yeah, especially after last year with DeMar Hamlin. So yay for Cincinnati. Let's keep that up. Let's not be jerks.
Love it.
Yeah. All right.
Well, did you have a Cincinnati moment this week?
You know, it was last week, actually.
Okay.
I just wanted to mention that we wrapped up Real Men Wear Pink. October's over.
I was going to ask you about this.
I'm back to wearing dark, muted colors again.
Okay.
So the Cincinnati campaign came in fifth in the nation with the money it raised.
Woo!
I know, beating out some larger cities. We definitely punched above our weight. And I also wanted to say that, as we hoped, John Fay, who is posthumously the honorary chair of the campaign, and also prior to his death, he was already raising funds for this campaign. For those who don't know, he covered the Reds for the Enquirer for many years. His wife was fighting breast cancer while he was participating over the years in Men Wear Pink. She died earlier this year, or late last year, I can't remember, but less than a year later, John passed away. So his family took up the charge of continuing his campaign, and I got to meet his nieces, Jen Gruber and Julie Seaton, and them two together in the family, but especially Jen and Julie, were a force of nature. And John came in on top, raising $37,000,
wow,
which is, I think, among the highest ever raised by a Cincinnati Men Wear Pink ambassador. So yeah, it was just a great experience to be part of that. And since we, you know, talked about it a lot on this podcast, I thought we should just put a bow on it. And I want to thank everybody who supported John's campaign, my campaign. And you should be proud of Cincinnati's performance on the national stage when it comes to raising money through Men Wear Pink.
I am. And what did I suggest? That you hang the pink sequin sports coat in your office just as a reminder throughout the year.
That is a great idea because it definitely looks out
of
place.
It's like a decoration.
Yeah, it is a decoration. It definitely looks out of place in my closet.
It looked perfect when you were wearing it.
Well, for those who didn't know, at the event we had at the Holy Grail, I decided that for some reason, since we're, you know, going all in on pink, that I have a pink sports coat that I ordered a couple of years ago, but it's just a, you know, basic Barbie pink sport coat. It doesn't have bling. It doesn't have sequins. So I saw this.
You up for the Annie.
Yeah, I went on Amazon and searched for sequin pink jacket. And man, there are many, many choices. I found the most Liberace looking jacket.
How's
I could.
Your algorithm now? Like,
oh,
what
no.
comes up after that?
It's fortunately I don't go on Amazon that much, so I don't know what it's going to suggest for me. But you're right.
How
I'm
do you
afraid
get things like toilet paper and paper towels?
I go to the store, Sherry.
No,
old
those come
school.
Right to the door.
I can't pay extra for that stuff. I, you know, even with Prime membership, I feel like. Plus, I like going to the grocery store. You know. See friends,
it's a conversation
see
people. For yeah. another day, bro.
Yeah, all right.
We
well,
have to
thanks.
Go write post-election stories.
Okay, let's do it. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you next week.